This is the best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
It's Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Jason Fitz. We're also on Sirius XM Channel 80. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. You can follow us at Golic and Wingo on Twitter and Instagram. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the show, Penzo Performance Line, and a change coming in Washington today as we will get an announcement from the team today that they are no longer going to sport the same name. That's change coming, but there's more change coming in the coming months.
Listen, there's much more important change coming, especially in the sports world, than my change. But I said on this day I would let everybody know for those that, who cared. We know Golic and Wingo is ending on July 31st, and my run on morning radio at ESPN, which started back in 1998 with Tony Bruno, is ending July 21st. So it's my 22nd year of doing it, and it will be over. I would have loved to have kept going, but not in the cards right now. That's not the way it's going to be. I work for people. That's, you know, it's how it all works, and they want to go in a different direction, which is absolutely fine on their part. The choices are made. But I do have a contract through the end of the year with ESPN, and I didn't want to just sit around and do nothing. So I approached them about, hey, can I go back and do what I first did when I got here, started working for ESPN in 1995, and that was college football games. So if there is college football games, I'm going to go back and do college football games. I started doing that in 95 and then started doing the first NFL show. Was it not NFL Live, then it was NFL Tonight. Me and Mark Malone, Sean Salisbury, Merrill Hodge.
Leather jackets.
We started that show in the 90s after that. And then started the morning radio with Tony and then kept doing college games and all those other things until 2005 before my oldest, who was Mike sitting right here doing the show with me, went to high school. And I told ESPN I wanted to stop doing college games while my kids played and so I could see them play in their events on the weekends. And so that's been a while since 2005. I did a few college games here and there. Mike, you and I have done a few, and that's been a ball, by the way. So I've always loved that. So I'm going to get back to it. I'll do some appearances on SportsCenter talking college football, NFL, some college football live stuff. But I wanted to keep doing something. And then at the end of the year, we'll see. Maybe I'll keep doing it here. If they choose not, then it'll be somewhere else. But I'm too young to walk away, that's for sure. So I look forward to college football. I did it with so many different people as well, from, you know, when Dave Barnett and Bill Curry and I did it, and with Sean McDonough, I've done it with Mark Jones, I've done it with, and I saw, because Shefty tweeted it before, that I'm going to be doing games. I actually worked a game in 98 with Steve Levy. It was his very first game as a play-by-play guy. We did a game in Illinois, and that was great. He did a great job, and he said I wasn't very, you know, he was being self-deprecating, but obviously he's going on to do an incredible job.
Who has gone on to parlay that into being the voice of the Bahamas Bowl every year. Yeah. Like, but if anyone has worked the system well, it has been Steve.
His career has been incredible. I'd like to take credit for it, but I certainly can't. But there's a nice note by Steve in there. But I'm looking forward to doing that. So that's what I'm going to be doing throughout this year if we have college football. And I hope we do, and I hope to be doing that going forward. And real quick, I would just love to thank everybody from my peers out there in the business to all the listeners out there for the really, really nice tweets that have been going out. I've really, really appreciated, very humbled by all of that. Been doing this a long time and got to talk to a lot of people and to hear the feedback from either people I've worked with or people that have listened or watched the show. Has really been a humbling experience, and I really do appreciate it. But I'm not going away completely, so you'll still hear me.
I was gonna say, though, it felt like a Twitter eulogy. You were still very much alive
it
through
really
all.
Did
the, I mean, I can say people sent flowers and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I was like,
are you?
I said you're not allowed to tweet anymore because by Twitter standards, you are now dead.
Not stunningly, Bill and his wife Carolyn sent flowers.
Yeah, shout out to Bill Curry for causing my mom to just spontaneously burst into tears into our kitchen. It was like watching someone eat a hot pepper. You saw the physical reaction, and then the eyes immediately water there on account of the sweetness of the curries.
Bill and Carolyn, wow, unbelievable.
And shout out to Schefter for pulling off breaking that news during the segment with us, I believe, as we were talking to Schefter about everything that's coming up with the NFL news, and we've got the statement from Washington that we'll get to in a second here, but Schefter managing to break that news mid-interview with us is a skill that very few besides him have.
That's why he's Schefter.
That's exactly
there's
right.
A moment here. Like, you give him a nugget of news, he's going to take it to
he's
Twitter.
He's going to run with it. So.
I did not realize, to your point, until I
tweeted something complimentary to you in response to all of this. And then I started getting all of these tweets and people saying, oh, my God, what happened to Mike? I didn't realize that's where we are on Twitter now. Like the minute you tweet something like,
well, it's like when Betty White trends every time. Oh, you just assume the worst.
You pray. Oh,
it's terrible.
You close Twitter and ugly cry.
But I look forward to it. And I know I've left out names of other play by play. And I apologize. I just want to throw a few because I wanted to get Steve in there because it was his first game. But I love doing college. So, again, I hope there's college. So that's some change going on, at least with my life and where I'm going. But there's obviously a lot bigger things going on as far as change in the world, no doubt about it.
Well, and for sure, it's Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio. Jason Fitz in for Trey, sitting with Mike Golic Jr. We do have a statement. This is breaking. We have a statement from the Washington football team. The statement says, quote, on July 3rd, we announced the commencement of a thorough review of the team's name. That review has begun in earnest. As part of this process, we want to keep our sponsors, fans, and community apprised of our thinking as we go forward. Today, we are announcing we will be retiring the Redskins' name and logo upon completion of this review. Dan Snyder and Coach Rivera are working closely to develop a new name and design approach that will enhance the standing of our proud, tradition-rich franchise and inspire our sponsors, fans, and community for the next 100 years. That's the statement directly. And again, as people have been reminding me on social media, rightfully so, obviously I used the team name in that process of referencing the team because they used it in the statement. So there's only so much I can do to get around it. I am trying to break that.
Which is also interesting, though, that they would, in a statement about no longer using the team name, still use the name in that way when the rest of the world is kind of going, all right, we'll use the placeholder of Washington football team for the meantime there, but no one's ever accused the NFL or its some of its parts of necessarily being PR wizards in a lot of this. But I got to say, like this weekend, I was actually, before we heard any of the rumblings of this announcement, because it happened sort of later in the day yesterday, I've been sitting around wondering, man, this review process has taken a while. What exactly is happening here? And I understand there are all the things that go along with trademark law choosing a new name and all this, but I'm like, this seems to be taking kind of a long time. And so maybe they were feeling the outside world sort of angst with that and went to answer this question. But we had the big wonder of why, because you were starting to hear rumblings out of local media there that there was more news surrounding the team that might be coming today that may be less than stellar. And was this a situation to kind of help mask that? And so my antennas are still kind of up with that. But knowing my response, maybe the team was trying to be transparent in this process to prevent others from feeling that way.
By the way, they'll also need to do a change of address. The address on the statement is there. I mean, the current street address is Redskin Park Drive. So they're going to have to figure out a way to even change street names when you talk about the complications of a name change.
And then there are complications of it. So we're wondering about the timing of it. We had Jason Reed from The Undefeated on just a little while ago. And interesting when he says this all thing is going to be buttoned up by. That's what he said.
And let me tell you something else, just getting off the phone with some other people around the league. What I'm being told is that the expectation is that before training camp, before Washington's NFL franchise goes to training camp, this issue will be resolved. Multiple sources have told me that this morning, because Roger doesn't want this lingering. He doesn't want this being another talking point with everything else going on. As you guys know, as you guys were just talking about, this COVID situation is going to take up a lot of space, rightfully so. So the league doesn't want this naming situation to carry on.
So here's the funny thing, a thorough review. Like, what does that look like? If you're Dan Snyder and you've had this name for this many years and you've fought this, issue for this many years, I mean, it feels like the thorough review is one phone call, right? Like, the owners call you, the rest of the owners call you on a conference call and say, hey, this is bad business and we think you should change the name even if you don't. Like, I can't really figure out what the next step in a thorough review is other than calling the people that you've already been saying you won't listen to and now listening to them suddenly, which doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense.
Maybe some journaling in there. You talk to a medium. You know, you consult a number of other experts on this stuff. I can't claim to know the personal habits of one Daniel Snyder.
Like other things that have changed, this has been talked about before, but never with enough steam to change it, even to the point where Dan Snyder 7 years ago said he will never change the name. That's why we're always careful when we say the word never. Because now he is going to change the name because momentum builds and then it loses steam in some things and you keep the norm. Well, momentum has built so much over the last few months with things going on around us that change is happening in places. So this built enough momentum, enough to the point where three of the owners who own 40% of the Washington franchise are selling, which brings to me up another question. Boy, is it worth jumping in and buying, because the NFL is a lucrative business? That's a discussion for another day. But so all these years of him saying the name will never change, so now in a matter of weeks, he has to decide not only that he's going to change the name, but what is the new name going to be? Is it already going to be an old name used in the NFL that is already trademarked to make the process easier? Is it going to be a complete brand new name? Is it going to be, as you said, Mike, go the easy route and do an animal? You know,
Jason brought this up. We have Bulldogs represented on every level of football but the NFL. Changes now.
And if someone correct me if I'm wrong, that used to be the old Canton Bulldogs.
Well, and the Cleveland Browns are associated with the dog pound, with that. But I'm talking about as an official helmet decal mascot, tried and true.
So, but I thought it interesting there, and Jason just saying, not just have a name by then, but have it all buttoned up to where you have a logo in time for the season, you know, everything, because that's what you wonder. Because they can do the easy thing if they don't have it in time, is you take the logo off the helmet right now and take the word Redskins, which is right under the V and on the thing, off, because they said they want to keep the colors the same. So you can make it blank and easily go on and play because you're keeping the colors the same. But if by then they're all ready to replace it with all the new stuff, that would be interesting.
I'm wondering if it's just like you said, being able to make those easy cosmetic changes by then, and then have the plan in place for the rest of it,
right,
where we're not going to be sending out any more of that stuff into the public. But as far as some of the more difficult things to change legally, here's exactly what we're going to do. Here's when we're going to do it,
right,
knowing
right.
full well we at the very least won't be going out with that imaging as a part of our organization for this season.
For the love of God, just don't give us a terrible, like, take your time with the logo, because Twitter hates every logo
fan
base hates change anyway.
I'm going to say, man, you saw what happened to the Rams and the Falcons and all these jerseys and logo changes, man.
Take your time. Yeah. Get it right. Go look at Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Another big thing over the course of the weekend, at least for me, was Fight Island, which we all know how obsessed I was just with the term. Well, to me, the night of fights, or early morning of fights, I should say, lived up to all of the hype. But let's get a little expertise on it. We'll head over to the Shell Penzo Performance Center, where we're joined by Ariel Helwani of the Ariel Helwani MMA Show. Ariel, thank you so much for your time. I saw you tweeting as it went down, but, you know, there was so much hype for what we expected out of Usman Masvidal. Did it live up to the hype in your mind?
Well, first of all, guys, thank you for having me again. Hope you're doing well on this Monday. I think it lived up to what I thought it was going to be, which is to say Masvidal taking this fight on 6 days' notice and having to cut all that much weight, 22 pounds in a matter of 5 days, was going to take a toll on him. And if you watch the first round, which I thought he won, by the way, it looked like he was kind of swinging for the fences because he knew that he would gas out as the fight went on. Usman's a really tough guy and a great wrestler, and that can make you really tired. And it seemed like post first round, second, third, and then as the fight went on, he was just, you know, he was just spent. So there was a part of me as I was watching this thinking to myself, like, okay, this was fun. This was great. All credit to Usman. He's the champ. He's still undefeated in the UFC. But, man, I wish we could have seen that fight, you know, with Masvidal getting a full training camp and not getting tired, because he's not that kind of guy. But when you consider everything he's been through over the past week, it was inevitable that at some point in that fight he would get tired.
Usman with 5 takedowns in that fight, 17-1 overall, 12-0 in the UFC. Now, with Masvidal, if he'd have won this, we already know the kind of star power that he can have. He is so out there and engaging and all that, and maybe too much sometimes, but we knew that potential of stardom that was budding there. What about Usman? He's the champ. What is their potential there as far as this star power to help carry the sport?
So obviously he's not on the level of a Jorge Masvidal. I actually was looking at our ESPN MMA YouTube channel, and I think the Masvidal post-fight interview has well over 1 million views, and the Usman one has like 250,000 views, and I think that says a lot. Masvidal obviously has been in the game a lot longer. This is his 17th year, but he has been able to connect with the audience in a very special way. They feel like he's authentic. They feel like he represents, you know, his town, the 305, the state of Florida. Cuban people love him as well. Usman has had a hard time connecting with the people like that, and I think sometimes people feel like he tries a little too hard in interviews, and, you know, when he's doing media stuff or in front of the crowd, walking to the cage and all that, he just has to be himself. And the other issue is his style isn't the most fan friendly. In my opinion, I feel like this is mixed martial arts. I hate when fans or media criticize fighters for doing what they do best. You're allowed to take people down. That's part of the game. If you don't like it, go watch kickboxing. Go watch boxing. So he is a great wrestler. It would be foolish for him to not use his wrestling. But on the flip side, you had this sentiment on Saturday where people were like, oh, you robbed us of fun because we all wanted to see Jorge Masvidal knock someone out or get involved in a striking battle and all this stuff. And we didn't see that. So people were kind of down on Usman, and I feel like he almost had to apologize afterwards. He has nothing to apologize for. In this game, you make a lot of money when you're the champion, and when you lose that belt, you go all the way to the bottom of the ladder and you make less money. So for him and his family, he has to do what's best, and he can't worry about getting into a striking battle, because guess what we'd be saying today if he did that? How dumb was Kamaru Usman for striking and standing there and not using his wrestling with Jorge Masvidal? So he's got a ways to go. There's no doubt about it. He's certainly not one of the more popular fighters in the UFC because of his style, but I don't think he should apologize, and I think he should just keep doing his thing, because eventually you keep racking up those wins, the paychecks will increase.
Ariel Helwani with us here on Golik and Wingo. Imagine telling someone else who's going with the threat of getting their face punched how to defend their face. What a ludicrous concept for anyone to criticize in that one. Ariel, I'm curious, though, as someone who lives and breathes the sport, were you getting a good laugh out of the rest of Twitter and the world discovering the foot stomping portion was legal in MMA?
Well, I have to say, it's like, you know, we have these moments in the sport, and they come maybe like twice a year, three times if we're lucky, when I'll take us, you know, Saturday night when there's a big pay-per-view, we're so locked in and there's so much going on, there's so many fights and they come fast and furious. But when I take a step back sometimes and I look at Twitter and I see, you know, Damian Lillard tweeting about it and, you know, multiple ESPN personalities such as yourself, Mike Jr., and I'm like, wow, people care about our little sport. This is nice. It feels good to be accepted. And so I get a kick out of it. I don't get upset about those things. You know, there's a lot of people that treat MMA like that band that, you know, they watched growing up. Jason, I know you know what I'm talking about, that band, that underground band that everyone's like, that was my band. And then they make it to MSG and everyone's like, you sold out, you sold out. I don't feel that way at all. Like, I love it. And I think it's funny when people are criticizing the maybe not so exciting aspects of the sport. But make no mistake about it, what Usman did was 100% legal, and it was a good game plan. They're clinched up there. Yeah, okay, you can't really do much. Your arms are tied up. Stomp his feet. Why not? I mean, Conor want to fight, you know, hitting a guy with his shoulder. There's no one, there's nowhere in the rules that say you can't do that stuff, and that's the fun part. You have to adapt and overcome. So, yeah, it was funny, but I wasn't all up in arms, offended. You know, a lot of my colleagues will retweet stuff like that and be like, oh, look at these people. They don't know MMA. Nah, man, for me, it's like everyone jump on board. This is a really fun sport, and when you have moments like Saturday night where you get these two characters who hate each other and it captivates the sporting world, and especially we're lucky right now because there's not a lot of competition, I think it's great. It warms my heart.
I'm talking to Ariel Helwani. You can check out the Ariel Helwani MMA show. And yeah, I'll never understand why fans want their favorite band not to make as much money as possible. But you mentioned the rules, so I got to get your thoughts, because the end of the Aldo fight was tough for me to watch as he just laid there and took a beating and the ref let it go. What was your reaction to the way that fight ended particularly?
Oh, that was horrible. That was the worst part of the entire night. Not the the Max Holloway, Alexander Volkanovski situation, you know, where a lot of people thought Holloway, including myself, won. That was the worst, because that's the kind of thing that will affect Jose Aldo for the rest of his life. There was no need for that fight to go on. You know, in my opinion, it probably went on 2 minutes too long, maybe even more, and especially the final minute where the guy is – look, these fighters have a lot of pride, right? And no one wants to tap due to strikes, because unfortunately in our sport, you're viewed as a coward if you do that, which I think is ludicrous, especially for a guy like Jose Aldo. Like, that guy has nothing to prove to anyone. But he was turtled up. He was not intelligently defending himself. He was doing nothing to defend himself. He was basically telling his team and the referee, hey guys, I want out of here, because he's turtled up. He's not doing anything. And meanwhile, Jan is hitting him with a lot of shots, and this was one of those cases where, because there was no audience, I feel like you can feel and hear those shots a lot more. And it was uncomfortable. There was nothing that was going to happen that was going to change the outcome of that fight. And I know what the referee, Leon Roberts, who is typically a pretty good referee from the UK, was doing there. He was giving Aldo respect. He was giving a legend who was probably fighting in his last title fight the opportunity to reverse course. But come on. That could have been your first fight that you ever watched, and you knew that the guy was done. He just didn't want to tap due to strikes. Because you could tap – like, people think you could just tap from a submission. You could tap due to strikes, and the fight will be over, but no one wants that. Like, that's one of those moments where people will make fun of you for the rest of your career, and it's really not right. George St. Pierre did it once against Matt Serra in 2006, and people made fun of him forever for that, and I think that's crazy. You're getting beat up? All right, that's it. Live to fight another day. So, yeah, that was very uncomfortable, and again, it's one of those things in the sport. The refereeing is so subjective. There's no clear guidelines when you should stop a fight, much like the judging is very subjective. And in that case, I think the referee dropped the ball and should have stopped it way sooner.
Well, so we had three title fights, Ariella. One was unanimous decision. The other we all said should have been stopped a little earlier. And then you just brought up the subjectivity of not only the ref, but the judges. And that would bring us to Volkanovski and Holloway. That was a fight, a split decision for the champ to remain the champ, and many thought that Holloway was the winner in that one. Take us through what you thought there and how that decision went down.
Well, first of all, this was an immediate rematch, and historically, when the guy who was the champion going into the first fight goes into the second fight, when they run it right back, that guy doesn't fare well for whatever reason. I think historically, like, that guy is 2-8 in those 10 instances. In this case, Max Holloway looked phenomenal early on. I thought he won the first two rounds very clearly. He was relaxed. He had made some adjustments from their first fight because leg kicks were a big part of their first fight, and he was getting hit a little bit, but nearly not as much as the first time they fought back in December. So I thought, all right, Max is back. Like, this guy is he's figured it out. And so he won the first two rounds. And by the way, one of the big stories going into this fight was the fact that Max told me that he couldn't do any training. He had to do everything via Zoom. So he was even joking about it in the middle of the fight, and we were joking about it online. Like, hey, maybe Zoom training is the way to go because he looks amazing. Then third and fourth, Volkanovski figured it out, and I thought he won those two rounds. Not as clearly as the first and second for Max, but I thought he did enough to win those rounds, so we're going 2-2 into the fifth. And I thought Max won the fifth, and I was very surprised. But a lot of people – I got so much hate yesterday. Holy smokes, here I am trying to enjoy a nice little Sunday, finally a day off with my family. And people got so mad at me that I said it wasn't a robbery. And it's crazy to me that people are so hung up on that word. To me, when you have a fight that the first four rounds were pretty clear, two for Max, two for Volkanovski. And by the way, all three judges scored it the exact same. First two for Max, second two for, 1 and 2 for Max, and 3 and 4 for Volkanovski. Everyone agreed on that. And then it all comes down to a pretty close fifth round, and two judges gave it to Alex, and one gave it to Max. That's not a robbery. A robbery is when someone, you know, won all three clearly, and they give it to the other guy, or 4 of 5, and they give it to the other guy. Here, it came down to one round. That's just a really, really close competitive fight at the end of the day. So at the end of the day, I thought Max won, but I'm not here crying bloody murder or anything like that. It's just a close fight, and again, judging. It's a problem in our sport because they use a boxing model to judge MMA fights. They use the 10-point must system, 10-9 for the winner of the fight. And there's just no real clear guidelines as to who won what. MMA, as you guys know, is a much different sport than boxing. You can kick, you can punch, you can knee, you can take someone down. And I don't feel like they take that into account of the judging. And that's why in these close rounds, and especially in these title fights, you're often going to see situations like this.
Follow him on Twitter at Ariel Helwani. Check out the Ariel Helwani MMA show. As always, my friend, we appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Mike Sr., you're the man. All the best to you. Thank you for everything.
Thanks, Ariel. Appreciate that very much. Really do.
Got to give the women, by the way, a little love, too. The two women's fights right on the main event, or the main card, were absolutely spectacular. So,
and I also agree with him about the robbery. This was last round, 1 point by, you know, one judge. You know, or the two judges going, you know, for the champ on that. So I agree. A robbery is when something is so far one way and it goes the other way.
I can say you mentioned those fights. That Thug Rose fight, her face after that, to be on the winning side of things, that is a testament to this sport.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
What an absolute battle that was.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day. What a show. What a time.
It went from predictions to reality as we wake up today to find out that there will be an announcement from Washington today from the football team, not of the new name, but at least of the fact that the team has decided after an investigation, they will, in fact, change the name.
If we're going to talk about predictions, this could have been the easiest prediction of all time, right? I mean, this is going out on the least limb as possible that this was going to happen.
That this is that we are going to get an announcement about an announcement that's going to come at a later date. Antennas are firmly up.
I mean, yes, and there's some – you can hear the cynical tone in some of our voices to the fact that this is – I mean, we've seen this coming. Let's be real about it. But we're going to get some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And in order to do that, we're going to head over to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line where former Washington football player John Jansen joins us. So, John, I'm really interested in your perspective because as we've been talking about on the show this morning, much has changed in the last couple of months of the world, and now it seems like something that was impossible is going to be a reality today with the name change. When you played for the Washington football team, was there some conversation behind the scenes from players about even what the name meant?
Honestly, there between the players, there really wasn't. We would get asked the question a lot about, you know, the controversy over the Redskins name. And quite honestly, until you – I mean, we've been talking about this, but until you said former Washington player, that's where it kind of really hit me. That's the first time I've been introduced as a Washington player and not as a former Washington Redskin. So that kind of tells you where our mindset as players were. And we would get asked, you know, about the meaning of the name and – you know, we weren't, most of us, and I was drafted by the Redskins, so I wasn't given that opportunity to say, hey, this is where I want to go play. This is, I grew into enjoying playing in Washington. I respected Dan Snyder, and what you do when you take the field is you playing for the name on the back of your jersey, and that was Jansen. You're playing for the logo and the name and the team that is on your helmet, and you're playing for your family, you're playing for your coach, you're playing for the community that you are in and that you represent. And I always wanted to go out there and represent it with a guy that played hard, that played tough, that played physical, that would do anything to win. And that's really the mindset of the guys on the team, and it wasn't necessarily about what the logo meant. In regards to what we are talking about, that conversation was there. It just wasn't the conversation in the locker room.
John Jansen joining us. He was a second round pick for Washington back in 1999. You played there till 2008 and finished your career in Detroit in 2009. So you said that was the answer you and some of the guys gave at that point. When you were done playing, did that change for you, the thought process of the name? And if so, when did that start to affect you?
After you start to look at things differently as you get older and as you start to listen to more things, you read more things, you experience more things, and you start to look at the world around you and you say, you know what, when I was 22 years old, I really didn't have a great perspective on the world. And at 30, I didn't have the perspective that I do now that I'm 44. I couldn't necessarily put a finger on when you start looking at things and go, you know what, that's probably not right. And then you look at it and you go, gosh, I really wish that something would change. And the only thing that I kind of cringe at sometimes is at when people dig their heels in, and when you hear the word never. And we've all heard this throughout the sports community and throughout everything, that you hate it when somebody paints themselves in a corner, because then when they're forced to do something, then, you know, never means what now 7 years. And that's what Dan Snyder said 7 years ago. And that's the feeling that he had at that time. But we also have to give, you know, Mr. Snyder and the ownership group, yeah, they were forced and there was a lot of pressure put on them to do this. And the reports are that they were making this decision, you know, and starting this discussion earlier than you know, when FedEx and Nike and everybody said that they were no longer going to support the team. So you've got to give everybody the opportunity to change. And there's it's never too late to change. It's never too early to change. But when your eyes do get opened, and, you know, mine were, a lot of other people's have been, it's okay to make a change. And I think as they get ready to make a change, a lot of people were worried about the ties to, you know, the glory days when Washington was feeling a great team and Dan Snyder not wanting to lose out on a lot of those memories. But I understand, even through all the respect, was there ever a feeling, especially maybe after, as a former player, when you started to get some perspective, that Dan Snyder and the organization were kind of putting you guys in a tough spot of constantly, I'm sure, being asked about this as former players when they did dig their heels in?
Well, it was, you know, again, I was drafted there. So I had the easy out of saying that I, you know, it wasn't my choice. And at some point when you sign a free agent contract, you know, or you sign another contract to stay there, it becomes more of your choice. But after 10 years, I really felt a part of that Washington community and a part of what everything, you know, that I tried to stand for in regards to respect and playing hard and doing all those things. And I never felt like I was in a bad position in regards of trying to, you know, either I wasn't trying to defend anything. I was just trying to say, hey, this is what I'm going out and playing for, and just go out there. And as most football players do, as most athletes do, hey, we just want to go out there and play. That was more of an ownership decision. That was more of a decision that was going to be made by people that had, you know, just a heck of a lot more money than us and more power than we had.
It's kind of the old, above my pay grade, you know?
Yeah, yes.
kind of, just, exactly. I'm just going out and playing.
We're talking to John Jansen, longtime Washington football team offensive lineman. And so, John, you know, we hear a lot, and I hear a lot on social media from fans that don't want the name changed. And they talk about history, as Junior just alluded to. So, as a former player, what would your response be to a fan that comes up and says that the name shouldn't be changed?
The history is still going to be there. You know, you can turn the TV on and you can go back on YouTube. You can go back on a lot of different, you know, apps or devices and look at all of the glory days of Joe Gibbs, of you know, the Hogs, and Russ Grimm, Joe Jacoby. And, you know, it's just that history is still going to be there. And the name, you know, in the city that you played in, I mean, that's one of the things too, when they talk about, hey, you know, RFK, when you leave RFK and you go out and you play at FedEx Field, yeah, the history changes, but, you know, in terms of the history doesn't change. It's that you do have to change moving forward. You do have to evolve. You do have to do things that are differently than in the past, but you look back and you stay, you know, the stats are still there, the wins are still there, the Super Bowl championships are still there. It's still a part of the Washington football history.
Talking to John Jansen again, second round pick in 99 of the what we're now going to say the then Washington Redskins. We don't know what the new name is yet, John. Now, you know, this has been in the news for a while, so I you may have thought of something already, or I may be putting you on the spot. But I know you're not going to have a say in it. But if they were to send out to all former Washington Redskins players, hey, we're changing the name, what would you want as a new name? What would you submit as an answer?
You know what? I don't really – I'm not a very original person, so I have
– and you can't say the Hogs either.
Oh, come on. That's where I was going. No. Absolutely.
I know you were.
Seth, somebody else said – I heard that, and I thought, you know what? I played at Michigan, right? And there's a great tradition of offensive linemen. So when I was drafted by the Redskins, Russ Grimm was the first one I talked to. And you know, I thought, my goodness, I get to go and be another part of a great tradition of offensive linemen and the Hogs. And I thought, wow, the logo would be a bit of a tricky part. because you don't want to have a big old pig on there with a big old snout. But I thought that would be a... you know, a little nod to, you know, if everybody wants to talk about the history of the Redskins, what is the one thing that you think about when you think about the Washington football team? You think of the Hogs. So why not call it the Washington Hogs?
See, I'm not as out on the big round pig as a mascot as you are on the helmet here.
I think I'm all in for a cute pig on a helmet, yes.
Well, no one said cute pig.
Cute pig on a helmet. Come on.
Are there any cute pigs? The one person on this set who's never been... 300 pounds, yeah. Saying cute pig. So
the marketing be through the roof.
So talking to John Jansen, you mentioned being a former Michigan offensive lineman. You host a podcast, In the Trenches, and I'm curious, as you're sitting there in, you know, Big Ten country and discussing all that, what you made of the Big Ten being conference to come out in college football and say, hey, we're going to go conference only going into this season.
Well, I was surprised at all of the shock that people had. We've been talking about going all conference games, whether it's the Big Ten, Pac-12, you know, all of the Power Five conferences. We're talking at some point of, hey, this is a scenario we're exploring. And when they come out and say it, it's all of a sudden it's kind of shock and awe. And I think it gives great flexibility. If you listen to Kevin Warren and the statement that the Big Ten put out, here's an idea that I think would be, you know, terrific. And this is somewhat original, so I guess I do have an original idea. It's, you know, if you've got two divisions in the East and West and you've got seven teams on each side, you don't know how long this season is going to be. You don't know. Obviously, we hope that, you know, as soon as we start practice, that the virus continues to, you know, diminish and the effects of it, and you could play a full season. But if you can't, put six division games at the very beginning of your schedule. That way, everybody in the East plays each other, everybody in the West plays each other. And then you have that Big Ten East, Big Ten West, you know, division leader that if you have to, you can say, hey, we're going to take a 3-week hiatus and let everything settle down and play a Big Ten championship game. And if you get seven games in, great. You can also put three crossover games at the end. And if you get those in, great. Everything that we have after that, that's all, you know, gravy on top of the old biscuits and gravy in the morning and the side of bacon, because I got to draw in the hogs and all of that stuff into this conversation. But if you have the opportunity to play division games and find out who the best is in your division, you could play a championship game. At the very least, we are all begging for something. That would be a great start. And then if you can play some crossover games, if we're talking about bowls, which I think is kind of ridiculous at this time, but if we're talking about a you know, national championship playoff, I think we are all going to be doing somersaults in the front yard.
John, we all want a season. We're all wishing for a season. What do you think the odds are we actually have a college football season?
I still think the odds are good. And it's not, as long as we're making the decision on science, and we all have been around the sports world long enough, and we have all watched the news, you know, just to no end over the past 4 months in regards to, you can make numbers look however you want them to look, and you can convince yourself of just about anything. But if we look at the science and we look at everything that the actual scientists are saying, I do believe that we will be able to have a football season. Now, is it going to start on time? I don't know that. It could. And if it does, is it going to be a you know, continuous season throughout the, you know, the fall? Again, I don't know that. There might be a point where we have to hit the pause button. But again, if you're going with all conference games, you only have to worry about 14 cities, 14 teams, 14 arenas, you know, or stadiums. You've only got to worry about those 14, you know, entities, and you have much more flexibility in regards to shifting the schedule around, hitting the pause button, hitting the go button. And I think it'll be a benefit for this year to be able to go with that.
John Jansen, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for the expertise. Stay safe, my friend. Thanks for hanging out with us.
You guys do the same. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, John. You notice we didn't bring up his podcast, Michigan Podcast, after last year's Notre Dame-Michigan game.
I was impressed there was a lot of constraint from you guys about talking to anything.
There's no reason to get into that stuff.
Nothing at all.
Only a fool trips over what's behind him.
Leave it alone.
I don't know.
Leave it alone.
That's all I have to say. Okay, fine. You know, I'm just saying. We'll see what happens moving forward with all of those things. I still like a cute pig as a mascot, though. I'll die on that.
I'm going to slice
that's
a bacon.
That's straight talk. Straight talk wireless. No contracts. No compromise. I mean, the whole stadium could smell like bacon. You could also call it the Warthogs, by the way. Shorten it to Hogs. You have alliteration, and then you can have a cute little warthog.
I mean, listen, it's not unprecedented for a pig or some sort of pig variant to be featured on a helmet. Like, we have the Arkansas Razorbacks, for God's sake.
I'm with you.
Like,
I'm with you. And listen, they are known for the Hogs. God knows I know that, playing against those guys. So
Washington Warthogs, and then you shorten it to Hogs. And then
no, not Warthogs. No.
Well, I mean, the cute Disney. Okay. Right. A cute Disney tie-in, you know?
Why do you want to, like, again, on the helmet, like, you don't necessarily need something cute.
You and I are both wearing minor league baseball t-shirts, right? Like, the reason people buy so much minor league baseball swag is because it's cute.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great alternate if you want to sell something cute, like a steamed cheeseburger.
I have a cute, angry cheeseburger, right?
I was going to say, there's nothing cute about that. That cheeseburger looks angry as hell. It's ready to tear somebody's head off.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
Hop over to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, where Jason Reed joins us from the undefeated. Jason, you've been around this team for a long time, my friend. You've seen the inner workings of this team for a long time. How surprised are you that we now actually have official change coming?
Well, Fitz, if you had asked me this question a month and a half ago, I would have told you I was shocked, but if you'd asked me 3 to 4 weeks ago when it became clear that there was this tectonic movement in the country, but in the NFL as well, and it no longer became viable for the team to keep that name when the league was going through such changes that made it impossible for Roger Goodell and the other owners to stick with Dan Snyder in keeping that name. So I'm not surprised at all that we're here now because of the events of the last 3+ weeks.
Jason, we've been asking everyone this morning just because the timing of this seems interesting. We talked to John Keim earlier who said he believes that they might already have the next name picked out and that we might not be far from that announcement. Why a separate announcement on this day to say, we're going to do the thing that everyone pretty much assumed we were going to when we said we were reviewing it in the first place?
Well, a couple of things based on my reporting, talking to people in the league, this has been such a divisive issue, such an issue for so long, because remember, Daniel Snyder for years maintained he would never change the name. So in looking at how the league has tried to roll this out, and let's be clear, this is not Daniel Snyder operating on his own. Roger Goodell and the people in the league office and Daniel Snyder's fellow owners have all been very involved in what this process is going to be. And what happened was, from my reporting, they said, all right, well, we're saying that we're going to examine changing the name. Well, then that's a part of a process. You don't say you're going to examine something, then just go change it, because we're saying this is a multi-step process. So, guys, what they're basically doing is they're following the format they laid out of we're saying we're going to examine it, we did that, now we're going to change it after saying we examined it. Then the third part of that process is saying, okay, here's what the new name is. But this is imminent. And let me tell you something else, just getting off the phone with some other people around the league. What I'm being told is that the expectation is that before training camp, before Washington's NFL franchise goes to training camp, this issue will be resolved. Multiple sources have told me that this morning, because Roger doesn't want this lingering. He doesn't want this being another talking point with everything else going on. As you guys know, as you guys were just talking about, this COVID situation is going to take up a lot of space, rightfully so. So the league doesn't want this naming situation to carry on. So that's why it's multiple steps, because they said it would be multiple steps.
Jason Reed from the Undefeated joining us here on Golic and Wingo, presented by Progressive Insurance. So along those lines, so let's say up to camp July 28th, they get the new name. They have it. By the season, do we have logos on helmets? Are we all set? Are we trademarked ready? Are we all good to go? Or is that going to be during the season or even later?
No, again, based on what my reporting is this morning, I was told that this issue will be buttoned up by the time the team goes to camp. Now, you mentioned July 28th. That is the day that we're thinking, but that may change. Obviously, events are very fluid right now with what's going on in the country, so that may change. But multiple sources have emphasized to me, not that, oh, we hope to have it then, and then all the other steps of the process, you know, logos and merchandising and marketing and jerseys and stores. They want this thing to be wrapped up before this team reports for training camp.
Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. We're talking to the undefeated Jason Reed. Jason, we've heard from the team, obviously, but we haven't heard much from Dan Snyder specifically. So when he comes out as part of this announcement, what do you expect his tone to be?
Well, Fitz, I mean, this isn't something he wanted to do. I mean, let's be very candid about this. He has maintained in print with his very, very strong quotes that this is something he would never do. I believe he's even said capitalize the word never. So this is not a position that he wanted to take, and it would not be a position he was taking unless he had to maintain his fiduciary responsibility to his partners. And that responsibility is to paint the league in the best possible light to maximize profit. So I think he'll do what he has to do, which he's done all along. This is something that he was dragged kicking and screaming to do. He never wanted to do it. He wouldn't be doing it now if it wasn't for business reasons, and business reasons not just for his franchise but for the whole league. So I think he'll say what he has to say. I think he'll eat this sandwich and do what he has to do, but it's not something that he wanted to do.
All right, Jason, the all-important question. What do you think the new name of the team is going to be?
You know what, fellas? I do not know. I'm going to be very candid about that. I've talked to a lot of people, but I do not know. But I do believe this, that whatever the new name is, era of divisiveness and a time when no matter what you think of this franchise and its history and its past, it was time to close the book on this and move to something new. And, I'll say this quickly. Years ago when I was covering the team for the Washington Post, an executive once told me, a longtime executive with the team, told me that Dan would never change the name because his great fear was that after all of the failure and all of the mistakes, the one thing that kept fans coming out to out to FedEx Field, the one thing that kept getting fans to buy the jerseys and buy the hats and still feel that pride was the connection to Joe Jackson Gibbs in the three Super Bowls, the connection to the Hogs, the connection to the Fun Bucks, all these things that the history of this team is so great. So the reason he didn't want to change the name, the executive told me, is because if you continue to lose, if you continue to be a laughing stock, maybe those people don't buy the jerseys. Maybe they don't buy the hot dogs. Maybe they don't come to the stadium. So this is not something he wanted to do. But I'll tell you what, if they can turn the page and actually become a successful franchise again, hey, it'll be all good.
Yeah, you're right about that. Winning cures everything when it comes to that. The undefeated Jason Reed. Jason, as always, my friend, we appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much for hanging out with us.
Anytime, guys.
So what's interesting, and Jason, you brought up this point when the Oilers, actually my first team, became the Titans. The Titans was an old NFL team name that you said the NFL holds on to, and so it's already trademarked, so you don't have any issue to go through. So you wonder in some old nicknames of teams if that could any of them being the offing for Washington.
Do you guys know who the NFL team who was originally the Titans was?
The New York Titans.
Yeah. Like I say, who didn't have the New York Jets.
Right.
Well, and so that you're right, Mike, because they did it as this big, we're going to name the team, and then conveniently the one name that they already had trademarked came out as the name of the team. But it was super easy and fast to get done. In my past life experience, trademark law is difficult and takes a very long time. So for them to get a name done, and as Jason said, and I think the most important thing we just learned from Jason Reed is his sources are telling them they expect it to be buttoned up and done.
That's why I'm wondering, could it be from the old team names that are still trademarked? We all have no idea.
And if it's not, them going through the season as Washington X franchise would be awesome too. Throw the X on the helmet. Let's do this the right way, being all sorts of wrong.
I feel like an internet sleuth somewhere can figure this out, because they do this all the time in the music business where super fans will find trademark names of songs to figure out, or copywritten names of songs to figure out what songs are going to be on the next record. Like they sleuth this. There's got to be some way that people can go in and try and figure out what the NFL's been trademarking of.
This is like when we do private plane call numbers for college football coaching searches, and we're like, well, this plane took off from such and such spot
right.
Lubbock and is going to such and such spot where we know this coach is going to be. So Twitter, Reddit, do your thing on this one. We trust you.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, no doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Michelle Penzel, Performance Line, to get some straight talk on all things Major League Baseball from ESPN baseball analyst Jessica Mendoza, who joins us now. Jess, thanks so much for the time. I've talked a lot to Buster only over the last couple of weeks. He doesn't seem to have a ton of confidence that baseball can get through the season unscathed. As we get closer to the season actually starting, how confident are you that they can pull this off?
You know, I think the priority is going to come to the postseason. And, Buster's right. I mean, the fact that I think 60 games will be played you know, by each team getting to the postseason perfectly, I think that'd be a pipe dream. But I do think the priority for baseball, because realistically, that's where the money is. That's where the attention is going to be. That's where really the focus, getting to October any way possible. So there's been a lot of talk, like, will there even be a World Series crown? Will someone even get it? You know, I do think that will happen. The path to that point, I think, is going to be pretty interesting. But I do think we will have at least a World Series champion by the end of this. How that looks, I mean, nobody's going to know. It's going to get pretty crazy, I think.
Yeah, the complexion of this changes a lot. We've heard obviously one of the big announcements over the last week or so was Buster Posey being one of the players to opt out of this. We know there was some worry that other players might follow in this. But from the players that have come back and started training again, Jess, what has the reception there looked like and the return to actual play been like for these players in the early going?
Yeah, they're having fun. I mean, I saw Francisco Lindor. There's a ballpark cam. You know, no one's out there. It's empty. There's inner squad going. You had Mike Clevenger on the mound, and Francisco Lindor hits a home run. And as he's rounding third base, he does like a somersault cartwheel in the home. And I forgot who was behind the plate, just shaking his head. I mean, these guys are having fun. And when you look at just the game itself and them having that separation, how far they are from each other, I mean, just the natural safety, I feel like, that baseball over almost any other sport has within it once they're out there. Now, what they're doing when they're away from the field, even, you know, within the clubhouse, is where it can get a lot more questionable. But it's been kind of fun to just watch these guys play. And especially because it has this summer training feel, right? I mean, it's so just unusual. We're in July. But these guys, I mean, just like any of us, right? They just grabbed our bats and went out and played in the backyard. That's what it looks like right now, except, of course, they're hitting it like 400 feet.
But listen, you're right. For any athlete, once they get in their lines of the sport, it's their sport. And you're correct in saying it's outside of that when they go home and stuff, where that could probably have the ultimate negative effect on the game going forward, as we're talking to Jessica Mendoza here on Golic and Wingo. So I'm asking anybody who has had at a high, high level a bat in their hand or have thrown a ball, which you have done at a very high, high level, when we get back to the season starting on July 23rd, who has the advantage, the pitchers or the hitters?
Oh, the pitchers. Are you kidding me? I mean, first of all, I just look at the first game, Garrett Cole, Max Scherzer, and I'm just like, for any hitter, it's like, really? Okay, so I've been hitting in my backyard or some warehouse or whatever we've been doing, right, this entire time off the tee. Maybe I've got some pitchers throwing to me. Of course, there's these few weeks that, you know, you're seeing the inner squad, stuff like that. But I'm telling you what, it's so much easier for a pitcher to be able to do what they've been doing these last few months and have the advantage instead of getting in the batter's box. Now, throughout the season, you'll see that change. Of course, with that first week, are you kidding me? Getting in that batter's box ahead of all these guys, I feel like, especially when I was looking at the first matches, I'm like, I just feel like that is one of the hardest. I don't care who you've been facing, what you've been doing these last few months, it is clearly advantage pitcher.
Jess, so along those lines, would you expect the pitchers to not be able to last as long, though?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen expanded roster. I mean, that's what's happened. And I'm actually kind of bummed that the rosters are now going to go to 30 guys just because now we're going to see even more pitchers. And one of the things that drives me nuts about the game and slowing down is the pitching changes that continue to happen. And now, I mean, you're going to have five more pitches per team. It just, what's going to happen, I think, is that, of course, a lot of these guys are going to want to save, make sure that they're easing back in. So you could see being pulled in the fourth or fifth inning and then pitching change. You could see five or six guys in the back end of a game, back end starting now like the fifth or sixth inning, because it's such advantage pitcher. You can really manipulate and match up with the additional rosters now. So that to me is like, oh man, like I just, you want to be able to really watch a guy go. And I just feel like now with only 60 games, my wish was that these pitchers could go, you know, 7-8 innings and you'd only see three or four pitchers a game.
ESPN baseball analyst Jessica Mendoza brought to you by Blue Emu. Pharmacist recommended Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief works fast and you won't stink. So, Jess, you're talking about a consolidated quick schedule, 60 games in very few days. When you look at that, what team do you think benefits the most from what they'll have to get through to get to the playoffs?
You know, I would have said Chicago White Sox until a couple days ago, and not that it completely changed, but I mean, that is a team still. You know, you look at especially a lot of their youth. I was really excited, and the reason I say that changes is Michael Kopech has now decided to opt out for the season. And this was an arm, you guys, a young arm. A lot of people don't know who he is. Had Tommy John surgery, was going to miss the bulk of this season up until this point. And so you think, wow, like this is an opportunity for a guy to be able to come in, really boost a team that doesn't get a lot of love. And when you look at that middle division, when I say middle, I'm not even saying AL or NL, because these teams will be playing each other in that kind of central region of the country. It is by far, I feel like, the weakest part. And so the White Sox are a team, and I still believe, along with the Reds, that can surprise people. Of course, the Yankees, the Dodgers, all the big names are still going to make the waves that they're going to make. But I'm really bummed that Michael Kopech, I totally understand his reasoning for opting out, although I think it has a lot more to do with the fact that he's just not as comfortable coming back, rushing back from Tommy John surgery. And to be honest, expectation, people like me have been talking him up now for the last few weeks, saying, hey, the White Sox are going to be that team to watch because of him. And I think rightly, he's like, you know what, I think I'm going to take this year off and really be able to get my arm back to where it needs to be and not feel the pressure of, I got 60 games just coming back from Tommy John. I got to carry this team and kind of meet those hopes of everyone expecting this White Sox to make some waves.
Absolutely. And his pitching coach, Don Cooper, certainly expressed some concern. He is a guy who's dealt with some anxiety, some things in the past that they want to make sure he gets a handle on. And so I'm sure that team will wrap their arms around him, even though he is not a part of what's happening going forward. Jess, we see it so much in the sports world right now is taking a look at teams that have used Native American mascots and looking and wondering if change was coming. We've seen what's happening with the Washington football team in the NFL. We've certainly heard a statement from the Indians. The Braves came out and said they're not going to be making a name change. Did any part of that surprise you?
It surprised me that they were so adamant. I mean, I love what the Cleveland Indians did, and Terry Francona just a week ago talking about, I mean, his quote, Terry with the Indians said, you know, even at my age, you don't want to be too old to learn or realize that maybe I've been ignorant of some things. Be ashamed. Try to be better. And he talked about them being open and listening, because the most important thing right now is being willing to listen, not necessarily just talk. And so what we're seeing is, you know, a lot of people just saying, you know what, we might not make the decision today to make any kind of change or not, but we're willing to listen. So I was more, I think, surprised at the Braves that they were just adamant, like, heck no, we're not changing anything. Like, we are sticking with what we know. And I get it, it's a very controversial topic, but I'll tell you what really stood out to me was listening to them, the Indians. I feel like do it right. Whether, you know, they decide what they decide to do or not, I think the point is that they're saying things that, like, you know what, for a long time we've said no, and I think it's time now to listen.
Follow her on Twitter, at Jess Mendoza. Jessica, as always, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jess.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
What is trending? Colin Morikawa comes from behind to force a playoff and ultimately beats Justin Thomas in the Workday Open. Still three shots behind Thomas with three holes to play, Morikawa made the only one birdie, and it was enough for a 6-under-66 to force a playoff. The three times he played the 18th hole, he twice could only watch as Thomas had 10. Morikawa took two putts for par just inside 10 feet to beat Thomas on the third playoff hole and win for the second time in his career. At 23 years old and 157 days, Morikawa becomes the second youngest winner at Mirrorfield Village, 2 days younger than when Tiger Woods won his first event at Jack Nicklaus's famed course in 1999. By the way, Tiger is back this week, so get
Roar.
Ready and strap in mm-hmm. for that one.
Roar.
Meanwhile, Cole Custer becomes the first rookie, speaking of youth, the first rookie winner in a NASCAR Cup Series in nearly 4 years. Custer surged to a lead in a four-wide final lap scramble on Sunday at Kentucky Speedway en route to a historic win. The victory was the first by a series rookie since Chris Buecher at Pocono on August 1st in 2016. Kevin Harvick and Martin Truex were dueling side-by-side. Shocker, Kevin Harvick with a chance to win down the stretch in a NASCAR race in 2020. I am shocked. They were going side-by-side for the lead on lap 266. Final restart when Custer, with a push from Matt DiBenedetto on the outside, made his move from 6th in the number 41 Stuart Haas Racing Ford. As the leaders bunched in turn one, Custer slid ahead and outlasted Truex's Toyota. It was a wild finish there. I saw people absolutely flabbergasted online that we're talking about a Cole Custer win in 2020, and Kyle Busch still hasn't managed to win a Cup Series race in all of this one. So go figure. As Kyle Busch said on the microphone yesterday, I don't know, 2020.
Every time you just said the word rookie, I really thought you were saying Wookiee at first, and all I could imagine was Chewbacca in a NASCAR just trying to get around.
Coming down the final lap. And, finally, in the EPL, Manchester City has won their appeal and will be able to play in the Champions League next season. Their appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport was over alleged financial fair play violations and are now free to play in the Champions League next season. City were originally banned from European competition for 2 seasons, but won their appeal to CAS, meaning fifth place in the Premier League will no longer qualify for the Champions League. Manchester United occupy fifth in the table as it currently stands.
Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo. Sitting with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. Don't forget, Golic and Wingo brought to you by 303 Touchless Sealant for the ultimate protection and shine in no time. In no time, we're going to get answers on whether or not we'll have college football. And understanding that last week we found out that the Big Ten was eliminating all non-conference games, then we found out from there somebody else has. Who's the other conference? I'm drawing a blank.
The Pac-12.
Pac-12, thank you. Yeah. The ACC expected to announce that. But we haven't heard anything yet definitively from Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, about actually getting rid of non-conference games. But he is concerned. So I want you to hear this. This is from Marty McGee Saturday morning, who talked to SEC commissioner Greg Sankey.
High to very high. I look at the numbers every day, and the important issue is not just numbers or looking at numbers. It is trying to understand and comprehend, and that's where literally you want experts, you know, moving you away from the scroll or the titles at the bottom of a TV screen or the interviews of this expert or that, and find people out of the public domain who are highly intelligent, highly educated, highly skilled at helping guide information. And we put a medical advisory group together in early April with the question of what do we have to do to get back to activity? And they've been a big part of the conversation. But the direct reality is not good. And the notion that we've politicized medical guidance of distancing and breathing masks and hand sanitization, you know, ventilation and being outside, being careful where you are in buildings. I mean, there's some very clear advice about you can't mitigate and eliminate every risk, but how do you minimize the risk? And we are running out of time to correct and get things right.
And I think that last part he talked about mitigating risk is what's been most frustrating in all this, because you've heard people throw up their hands and say, what could we possibly do? A lot of these states that are going through these spikes for the first time need only look to the states that have been through this already to see some of the things that helped in those situations to give you a chance. Because just because we don't have an ironclad plan to fix everything all at once in the form of a vaccine or anything else doesn't mean that there aren't things that have been effective for others, that have been effective for other countries and other states that could have helped in these instances. And you hear the frustration from Greg Sankey as he looks around at the places that have been affected now, some of which that affect his conference and the teams involved in it, and say, these aren't bubbles on college campuses. They're affected by the surrounding area and all this. And because you don't have that, it creates a complication, because surrounding communities in a lot of these areas haven't taken this as seriously as the schools and teams themselves, who we've pointed out time and time again, have created, yes, safer environments for the players to be in because of the testing and protocols and everything else. But they can only do so much themselves, because those schools are not completely sectioned off from the world like a Disney World bubble for the NBA.
And right now, when you're seeing positive tests on the college campuses, you're seeing, you know, they only let people work out in clusters, and even with masks and safe distancing. And so it doesn't get widespread yet through a team. We haven't gotten yet to the part of football where there is no social distancing. And if you're going to play football this year, we have to get to that. We got to get to actually playing football. And then, as you said, Mike, it's not a bubble. These players are going out to wherever they're going in college, off campus or whatever, and then coming back. and then practicing again. Now we don't have that social distancing because we have to play football, and you wonder if that will make things spread more. There's a lot to worry about, and he said it. We're running out of time, and we haven't even gotten to that part yet where we actually have people huddle up, whether they do or not, quite honestly. But you know what I mean, where they're all actually playing the game of football and not just social distancing anymore.
Right or wrong, because of the amount of exposure the SEC gets and because of some of the programs and the power they mean to college football, I feel like the eye-opening moment for many fans will be when the SEC makes change. That's the moment the fans have to step back and say whether, what, no matter what their belief is on any of it, you have to step back and say we have a problem.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.